welcome to The Rink, your weekly source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tapelake Graylian, along with Tom Luongo. It's almost Tom's favorite holiday, draft day. We're going to take a look back at some previous draftees, crunch a few numbers, and see if history really is doomed to repeat itself. All that and more coming up on The Rink. Tom, the draft is this Friday, June 26th, 7 o'clock Eastern Time. I don't know about you, but the Avalanche, I have no idea exactly what they're going to do other than probably take whichever top three pick is left. But with all the general, you know, with all the management changes, new general manager, new head coach, blah, 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 bit of a crapshoot as to what the Avalanche are going to do. How are you feeling about the Sabres?
They're in 13th position, meaning they'll take the best player available like they always do. I was just looking over Bob McKenzie's top 50 list, trying to get an idea of what's going to be available at that level. And there's a couple of very interesting players, but you know, we can talk about that in a little while.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a great post over at Pension Plan Puppets, that blog, which we'll link to at The Rink, which, of course, is at www.rinkpodcast.com, that has kind of a break that definitely breaks down some things about previous draft years. And also he published a spreadsheet of the draft, all the draft picks from 94 on. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating stuff. My favorite part is the is looking at teams and how they drafted and who, which percentage of players actually made it to the NHL, and then what percentage of players played over 200 games.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the top five teams on that list, for me, there was only one real surprise, and that Boston actually was the second best team at getting players to the NHL. The best team has been consistently San Jose, with over 45% of their draft picks making it and playing at least one game in the NHL, followed by Boston, Ottawa, Buffalo, go over here, and then Colorado.
And
go Francois Giguère. Yeah, Francois Giguère. The interesting part about that is that, you know, what you were saying, which is that of those five teams, four of them are also the top five. Four of those teams, except for Boston, are also the best at putting out and drafting and developing long-lasting NHL players, having played more than 200 games.
Yeah. No, that's true. You were saying that San Jose has 45% of their players make it to the NHL, and the average, of course, is 35% of players that make it over 200 games. It would be 14% of San Jose players make it past 200 games, and only 9.8% is what the average is. So that's pretty good success. I was a little bit surprised to see who fell at the bottom end of that, especially considering all of the praise that they get. Would be the Detroit Red Wings. Percentage of players making it to the NHL was they were last with 27.7%, and they were last in players making it over 200 games, which with 4.3%.
Yeah, that is really, really interesting, because all we ever think about is their players like Zetterberg and Datsyuk and that have created, you know, that come up through the Detroit system, these unknown guys they've found in the sixth and seventh rounds that, you know, are absolute they make it to the NHL and are complete superstars, and there's all the guys that they drafted that don't make it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, by the same token, Detroit's really good at picking up on the cheap other teams' castoffs and guys that didn't have a lot of there wasn't a space for them on the teams that do draft well. So it is, you know, like everything else, an interesting process of, you know, when do you pick up your talent and how much do you pay for it and how much do you spend developing it. It's very, very – it was an extremely shocking result to me when I saw it. And actually the title of the post over Pension Plan Puppets is Detroit isn't that great at drafting and other secrets, draft analysis 1994 to 2009. I'm like, I've got to read this. And, you know, PPP is one of my favorite people. So, yeah. You know, but.
really good work. You know, it's funny because, as they say, you know, Detroit's great at drafting, but they, you know, look at two of their big stars, Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg. You could say that they found kind of those guys that were laying around and ready to go, you know, in those lower rounds. But Pavel Datsyuk went 171st in 1998, mm-hmm. and Henrik Zetterberg went 201st in 1999. Yeah. Is that just that they developed these guys well? Did they miss them in the, you know, did everybody miss them, including the Red Wings, and they just happened to get lucky by picking up, you know, by those guys still being there? It doesn't seem like drafting these guys that late is, you know, is that smart. It just seems right. more lucky than anything else.
It must have been. I mean, you know, it's funny, you know, why guys have their why certain guys fall way out of favor on draft day, mm-hmm. and it happens, you know, with and the famous examples are guys like Angelo Esposito, who, you know, was a top 10 or a consensus top 5 a couple of years ago, and then wound up not going until like the 20th, you know, the 20th pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Once the shunning begins, then it seems to snowball, and, you know, it could have been an injury, it could have been just simple fact that, you know, the scouts missed these guys, or, you know, you got to remember that not every team has the budget or the manpower or whatever, or just the wherewithal to scout every one of the foreign leagues.
Oh, yeah.
Foreign development. Everybody has their favorites, you know, at the end of the day. They have their scouts in certain places and, you know, looking for talent. And so they all tend to draft a certain way. And you know, if you follow one team long enough, you'll know what the scouting staff's tendencies are. Datsyuk and Zetterberg it's unfathomable that there are that many great hockey minds that, you know, miss these guys. But mm-hmm. I don't know the specifics of their draft year and why it was that they were so far off of everybody's radar.
Yeah. Also, in those it's funny, in those years, there were how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6, 7, 7 players taken ahead of Pavel Datsyuk in 1998 by the Red Wings, and only 2 of them actually made it to the NHL, and one of those played 2 games. So,
right. You know, but let's think of it this way: look at the New Jersey Devils and their ability to find undrafted guys, mm-hmm. either out of the college ranks or the USHL. Brian Rafalski and John Madden were 2 guys that were, for example. Mm. 2 guys that were instrumental in their cup runs.
Yeah.
Not drafted. Just signed as free agents by Evil Lou. Yeah. So, I mean, the draft is fascinating. And for me, I think it is the best day of the year. I can say it without a doubt that for me, I love the draft more than I think anything else, unless, of course, obviously, Buffalo were playing in the Stanley Cup Finals. That would be slightly different. But
that happened, you know, once. You remember that?
Twice, actually. And it happened twice in my lifetime and only once in my memory. Because 74, I was not watching hockey when I was 5 years old. So, but, yeah, for me, the draft is just fascinating because it's, you know, you start the process of looking at who's going to be coming and how you scout your not only your own team, but, you know, the opposition and everything else, and get an idea of what's in their stable for that time to play amateur GM when it comes to the trade deadline and, you know, training camp and all that stuff. And it's just part of the whole process of, you know, being a hockey fan. I love the draft.
Mm-hmm. I love, one of the things I'm having a really good time with is, the pension plan puppets. He actually is allowing people to download the spreadsheet that right. he created, and being able to download that and then sort in however way you want, and find some information that, you know, I'm finding pretty fascinating, such as who in the. It's all from 1994 on, but who has the highest points since being drafted in 1994? Mm-hmm. And shockingly enough, that's Daniel Alfredson. I would never have guessed that.
Well, but Alfie's been a very consistent performer for mm-hmm. Ottawa for a long time. Yeah. You know, not you know, a couple of extremely good years, but for the most part, it's been an extremely consistent performer. Well, and to the NHL early, mm-hmm. and has played, you know, and has produced at a, you know, during his first couple few years, produced at an ever increasing rate, mm-hmm. while those Ottawa teams were improving. And you know, remember all those, Ottawa scored a lot of goals, you know, not even all through the 90s and, you know, in even a recent memory. So I'm not actually surprised at that at all.
Yeah. Not a lot of surprise in the points per game category. Crosby, Ovechkin, Malkin are 1, 2, 3. And yes. then Danny Heatley, Jason Spezza, Paul Stastny, Joe Thornton, and Ilya Kovalchuk are all one point a game or over.
Wow.
Yeah.
And those guys, really, every one of those guys lived up to their billing, mm-hmm. their draft day billing, without a doubt. You know, when they were the guys who were, for the most part, they were all head and shoulders above everybody else in their draft class, and they got to the NHL and proved it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm kind of surprised that Paul Stastny was a second round pick and went 44th yeah. overall. I figured he would have kind of gone earlier. In fact, he's the only second rounder in that list.
Yeah, I think he's the only non-top 10 guy in that list, to be
honest.
He's
the only non-top 2 guy in that list.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Okay, that's even better. Because I was thinking about that. I'm like, most of those guys were either 1 or 2. Maybe one of them was number 5. Because I remember I watched every one of those guys get drafted. For mm-hmm. Yeah, I've watched every one of those guys get drafted. So I couldn't remember quite who went 1, who won 2. That's right. You know, Ovechkin and Malkin. Yeah, every one of those are either top 1 or top 2. And then there's Paul Stastny. That is interesting.
What was the other one? Top penalty minutes. Peter Worrell. Which I wonder where he is now, because he was an Avalanche for a little bit.
He was,
I think he went from Florida to the Avs.
I think he played for everybody at one point, didn't he?
He was. He thought he stayed with Florida for a while. Kind of.
Yeah, he did. But then the minute he left Florida, he moved around a bunch, if I remember correctly. But I may be wrong.
That's 1,554 penalty minutes in 391 games played.
That's a fight a night.
Yeah.
That's fight a night, practically. Right?
It's close, yeah.
Yeah, that's close to fight a night. Nice.
And you know, he was a seventh round, 166th overall in 1995.
Now, that's a value for a seventh round pick.
Yeah. top penalty minute. I love this one. Top penalty minutes for a first overall pick. Ed Jovanovski.
Jovo Cop.
1,221 penalty minutes. Next on the list, second on the list, with 775 penalty minutes, so about 450 penalty minutes more than Joe Thornton.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, for Jovo, it's, you know, mostly, you know, cheap tripping penalties. So that's a lot of cheap tripping penalties. Cheap tripping. Obviously.
He's only played what, 70? Around 65-70 games more than Thornton, yet has about 450 more penalty minutes.
Yeah, Jovo's a relatively tough guy. I like Jovo, always have.
Yeah, let's see, least amount, of course, is Marc-Andre Fleury.
Certainly hope so.
With only four penalty minutes for Marc-Andre Fleury.
That's pretty good, actually. You know, he's definitely not Billy Smith in the crease. Let's put it that way.
He needs to get mad. He needs to get mad a little more often.
No,
he's no Hextall.
No, he doesn't, because, you know, he's got that thing that, you know, thing that, you know, none of my guys have.
Oh, if he wants to be Ron Hextall, he's, you know, his time may have passed to jump Chris Chelios. Because GM Ken Holland says that Chris Chelios is no longer going to be a Red Wing. It was kind of known at the beginning of the season that was going to be the case. And yet, unsurprisingly, Chris Chelios still wants to play somewhere.
I don't know. Good for him.
Yeah.
There's the AHL.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I hate to tell you, Chris, but you're 46 or 47 years old. There's the AHL. You know, I remember watching Chris Chelios play when I was a lot younger, mm-hmm. like teenager, that's how long he's been around.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. He's
yeah. He's, I mean, you know. You know, he's in the Gordie Howe territory now. I mean, you know.
Yeah, and Gordie the league, you know,
goals at 52 or something.
And like nobody was going to go after Gordie Howe. I mean, everybody's afraid to go after Gordie Howe. Nobody's afraid to go after Chris Chelios. You know, Chris Chelios. Yeah.
No, everybody's going to be looking at it. Could be looking at it as revenge. You hang around long enough, and you know everybody's going to get their lick in.
Hey, if the AHL is good enough for Mick Magoo, it's good enough for Chris Chelios.
They're a pair. They deserve each other to go down there. That's classic. Mr. Magoo. Mean? Yeah, that was a little mean. Mr. Magoo in the nose. Send them down there. Bye.
Getting back to the draft.
So when was Chelios drafted? Was there electricity when he...
Oh, God. I think they were... Yeah, I don't know how they... I think it was Ice Age, and it was when he learned how to skate.
I was going to say, you know, Henry Ford was still alive, I think. Maybe I can ask Chelios what it was like during the last depression.
Yeah. Oh my! That's not that's mean. It's not. It's true, but it's mean.
It is what it is. You know it is mean, and it is probably unfair because he was a hell of a defenseman for a great many years, even up until very recently. But you know, there's a thing in this life called ending it with dignity.
Yeah. Actually, but here's the thing.
For Shelley, I was telling it.
His name isn't on the list. Well, of course not. It's from 94. Sorry, never mind.
Right.
Look up. I was just thinking, wait a minute,
Shelley is so old that he's right. Actually lapped the clock and is ready to be drafted again, I guess. You know? This never gets old. I can do this all night. I'm here all week.
Superman has spun the world backwards.
Right, so we can draft Chris Chelios
again. Selected by the Montreal Canadiens, second round, 40th overall in the 1981 entry draft. Yeah.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, Mike Bossy had three careers in that amount of time. Wow. All right.
Yep. And he still, you know, he played... And even during the lockout year, he didn't quote unquote take it off. He played 23 games with the Motor City Mechanics of the UHL.
Good for him.
So
that's about where he needed to be. In Motor City, I think they're hiring. Is there anybody left in Detroit?
Worst the worst arena I have ever seen a game in was at the Motor City Mechanics. Oh, it was horrible. Worst place ever. So the first overall pick, New York Islanders have it.
Yep.
And Garth Snow is still staying mum as to who he's going to pick.
Yeah, and he's going to pick John Tavares.
Absolutely.
Or he's going to like trade down and be a laughingstock. Oh, no, sorry, this is Garth Snow. He already is a laughingstock.
I don't think he's allowed. I don't think he's allowed to be a laughingstock. I don't think they'll approve him to be a laughingstock
yet. Oh, okay. Right.
It seems
right.
Like everything's just so by committee there that no, you know, who cares who it is, you know?
He's going to pick John Tavares, and if he doesn't, he's an idiot. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Victor Hedman is he's going to be a great defenseman, and yeah, and I've heard the arguments for why you draft Hedman because you draft from the goal out, and you know supposedly they have a franchise goaltender when he can walk, and then you get the stud defenseman, and then you start building your centers, and you know if Garth Snow was Bill Torrey, that's probably what he would do, but. Likely he's going to draft John Tavares and
you kind of have to. I mean, yeah, he's ruin him.
Oh, sorry, Mike Milbury. He's not Mike Milbury. Right. Now, Mike Milbury would just
trade him. I don't think we know enough about Garth Snow at all, other than being, you know, the face of the franchise to say that he's not Mike Milbury. He might be. We don't know anything about him. That's the problem with Garth Snow. Everybody keeps saying what Garth Snow's going to do. I don't know. Has Garth Snow actually made a decision?
I don't know, but I can tell you that the Islanders were a hell of a lot more interesting when Milbury was in charge. Mm-hmm. Because at least they had something to talk about, other than, you know, Milbury was going to say or do something completely off the wall, and it was great fodder. Mm-hmm. And now he's, you know, he's a bad broadcaster for Boston. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Good old days are gone.
Well, you know, and here's the thing I look at. You've got, you know, Tavares is probably going to go first overall. I mean, it's just, you know, but last year, Tampa Bay had signs up, had big billboard banners with and a website devoted to Stamkos. And right. and it was the, hey, look, we're going to draft this. We're going to draft number one, and we're drafting this guy, and look at what we're going to do. And that was kind of the ticket push. Right. And, you know, I mean, it's a bad example because look at how Tampa Bay wound up. You know, it.
Those were talk about fodder. Talk about last year's fodder.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay was fantastic for us, you know, podcasters.
Oh, it was so much fun.
It was fantastic. They can do it again, actually. But your point was.
Sorry. My point being that, you know, that they were promoting who it was going to be, and very loudly. And Islanders are kind of, if they draft Tavares, I'm just going to poke fun at them for being the most anticlimactic thing ever. And right. I will come up with jokes about it.
As opposed to trading off Zdeno Chara and, you know, half of the draft class for Rick DiPietro. That's one of those.
You and know, then where signing DiPietro for that long and then.
Can he walk yet? I don't know. You play for the worst team in the league with the worst budget, and you wonder why he can't. They can't fix a simple knee injury or hip injury. I wonder.
I was amazed when that happened that so few people actually picked up that he did it at the they injured himself at the All-Star game a year and a half ago, and actually said, "Hey guys, I think I hurt myself." on live television on mic while he was playing, because he was mic'd up and he was talking to the broadcasters, and then hey guys, I think I hurt myself.
Not good. If they don't take the Tavares and they take Hedman instead, if they go off the board and they take Matthew Shane, and they're crazy, then you know Garth Snow is Mike Milbury, and he's just wearing somebody else's underwear or something, I'm not sure. But if he takes Hedman, you really can't argue with the choice, and it would be a good thing for the long-term prospect of the organization, but likely they'll take the virus. And if so, then you know Tampa Bay gets a gift in that respect. But Tampa Bay still will not be able to keep the puck out of their own net, because when it comes down to it, the Islanders need everything, okay? Mm-hmm. But Tampa Bay needs defensemen. So, you're almost hoping – I think you know if you're Tampa Bay, you're almost hoping that the Islanders do what everybody expects them to do, which is to take John Tavares, because they need Victor Hedman a hell of a lot more than they need Tavares or Duchesne. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I guess, maybe that's where it becomes interesting. You've already got Stamkos, you've already got Le Cavalier, and you're loath to trade of any, even though he would bring a massive return in order to improve your team, both in the short term and the long term. I still don't understand what's happening in Tampa. It must be all the sun. I can't figure it out, because, you know, I would have traded Mel Cavalier 2 years ago. Unless, you know, Montreal is really looking to move up or something, I don't know, and they're willing to. But no, I don't. Yeah, it's that's the way it's going to work out. So,
well, Tampa's a conundrum anyways. They were selling furniture on Craigslist from their arena. So they were selling a display case.
So that's awesome. I just saw something at onionnews.com. There was something that was moving around this morning that the United States sells their, the Onion Network News did a spoof of the United States sells their gold reserves to cashforgold.com in order to balance the budget.
Ripped from today's headlines.
And then that report, actually, there was, and we're going to, you know, we found an old couch and stuff. We put that up on Craigslist, and it was awesome.
It's true. The Lightning did that. And
the Lightning makes the Onion look prophetic. I like it a lot.
We already pretty much said that the Avs are going to take whoever's third, and the quote for that one, of course, goes to Mile High Hockey in the Sports Blog Nation mock draft. They said, no big surprise here. We'll take whichever the big three is available and immediately offer them the position as GM and coach.
Nice. That's one of the best quotes of the year. That's awesome.
And sadly, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty true. And I don't, heck, yeah, they finally, the Avalanche hired today someone to be, they finally hired a head coach at the for the Lake Erie Monsters, which is great, from outside of the organization, which seems like the only time that they're hiring anybody from outside of the organization, considering they brought in Steve Konowalczuk as an assistant coach. And Adam Deadmarsh is also in the coaching ranks now also.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
So looking over the...
Everything's a throwback these days.
Yeah, so. That's great stuff. The looking over the top 15 list, I'm like trying to figure out what Buffalo is going to do. And a couple of very interesting players in the 8 to 13 area. Because usually after the first five or six guys go, it becomes a very... It becomes different. It becomes a crapshoot. It's a really... It becomes interesting at that point who's going to be available and who's not. And it really becomes, you know, what team needs what thing most. You know, looking at where we are, I'm looking for the guy who says, you know, I'm looking for the guy on the list that's, you know, says, we'll put people through glass. I want him. that's who I want Buffalo to draft. I don't care if he's a defenseman. I don't care if he's a forward. I like somebody who will put somebody through the glass. I don't want Ryan Ellis, smart puck movie, heavy puck moving defenseman. Got plenty of those. Want somebody that's, you know, what is that? Oh, Jared Cohen, number Cowan, seventh on Bob McKenzie's list. Style like Braden Coburn, 6'5", 220 pounds, shoots left, stay at home defenseman. Mm. Sounds good to me. I'll take 20 of them. yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, I want somebody. Yeah, I just want somebody to put people through glass, and I don't care how you do it.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of those in the top 15, really. Top 20, to be honest with you. So it's going to be, we're going to wind up with somebody in that range between, you know, 8 and 14 on McKenzie's list. We'll see.
Who, do you have serious needs? I mean, like, how exposed
as an organization, as an organization, we have a shocking lack of toughness and goal scoring ability on the wing in the organization. They've drafted very heavily at defense in the last few years, and that's paid a lot of dividends. We've got a dizzying array of kids coming up through the system that are going to be that are going to fill out that blue line. And actually, I'd be surprised if the Sabres blue line this year doesn't sport at least two kids who were either in Rochester last year, in Portland last year, sorry, or even playing in junior. Tyler Myers might actually come out of camp and play as a rookie to go along with Chris Butler and whatever. You know, we've got at least two spots open on the blue line, so I'm not interested there. I'm not worried about that. Where we don't have any real top end wingers. That's mm-hmm. the real issue at that point. At this point, and that it's that, you know, draft the best overall guy available at every position, and you hope that they blossom up. But that, you know, you've got, you know, Gerby and Kennedy, who played in Portland last year and were great, and they'll probably make the team this year. But there's really not that much in the system after that. So they really need to go after top end talent on the wing, and because it ain't there. That if you have an organizational need, it's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't paid enough attention. I still make the same exact mistake with the Sabres still saying Rochester. It seems.
Yeah, I know. Well, they were there for what, 20 years or something like that. It was insane. They had a nice year in Portland last year. So things are coming along nicely, I think, as far as that goes.
Hey, I wanted to get your opinion on something that's you know, coming up in free agency. Jay Bouwmeester is going to be a free agent.
Yeah.
And some people are talking that Florida may try and trade his rights just to be talked to before free agency day. Is considering who we're talking about, and even just in general, does this seem like something that you would do if you were another team?
I would if I had serious... If I was seriously considering signing him, and I was on his short list mm-hmm. of teams that he wanted to go to, and apparently Bouwmeester wants to go to a contender, you know, preferably the Western Conference. But it's interesting. There was an article this morning. There was three articles this morning for the first time in weeks at the Buffalo News on what to do, you know, what they would do. And each one of the staff writers took, you know, GM for a day, front office for a day, coach for a day. And Bucky Gleason actually took his meds this morning, yesterday, and had a very interesting article about his goal was his roster makeover as playing Darcy Regier for a day was to go after Bo Meester, get rid of everybody else, and let the kids come in and basically rebuild through – basically take this year to get the kids as much experience as possible, bring up Myers, sign Bo Meester, get rid of Lidman, get rid of Talander, get rid of everybody – on the blue line whose name is not Craig Reve or did not come up through the system. So Spacek is gone. Newman gets to retire. And that one. So you make the room by getting rid of Talander and Libman in order to go after Bo Meester. The problem is you're gonna have to pay Bo Meester through the nose to go to Buffalo.
Right.
Buffalo would have to overbid. And I don't know if they're, you know, willing to do that. And I don't hear anything out of Darcy Regier trying to make a plan like that happen.
But, didn't Florida already try and pay through the nose and basically that didn't work out for them?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting. Bo Meester is going to make good scratch this year, but you know many of the contenders don't have a lot of cap room. So yeah. it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I would love to have Bo Meester on the Buffalo blue line. He would be perfect. Mm-hmm. He really would, and we'd have a nice big tough rangy set of top four defensemen, top five defensemen. It'd be great. But it's not going to happen.
It seems like a really bad year to hit free agency. Yeah,
you think this year's bad? Wait till next year.
Yeah. I think the market's definitely going to be correcting itself over the next 3 years. And I would seriously, if I were a player, be thinking about whether or not I really wanted to hit free agency or if I wanted to be able to make somebody pay in my own, you know, where I already am, where right. I've got a little bit more leverage and. I don't think there's going to be as much leverage out there for players.
It's going to be very interesting. There's a lot of teams that have committed a lot of money long term mm-hmm. to a lot of players, and you know, in a shrinking. And there's going to be teams that are not going to have the they may have the cap space, but they're not going to have the revenue mm-hmm. to pay. You know, where's Jay Bo Meester going to go? He can't go to a team like, you know, that has a ton of cap space, but has the revenues. I mean, they're not going to put a third of their salary structure, you know, 20% of their salary structure into one guy.
Right.
You know, pay him $8 million to, you know, pay him $8 million a year for a long term in order to rebuild. He's already been rebuilding in Florida forever. So interesting. Who's going to be really interesting actually is Marian Hossa and how much money he's going to get after he folded in the finals.
Right.
Again. I think that's going to be fascinating to see if how much of a pay cut he gets this year.
I actually read something on Deadspin that said that he was actually talking about he still made the right choice. He still made a really good choice, you know, changing teams and blah, blah, blah and all of that. And even, you know, basically the day before they lost, it still looked like a good choice.
Yeah. Oh, so. It was a fan. That's not. Yeah, I don't think you can fault Hossa for doing what was, you know, ultimately. I thought what he did was a very cool thing. He took a one-year contract with who he felt was the best shot to win a Stanley Cup because that's what he wanted to do. It's something that I wish more players would do, frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, when they have the opportunity to you know hit the paycheck or whatever, take a chance, do the right, you know, and play for the honor of winning a championship. What I found interesting was that as you know, I always like to say the past is prologue. And all those years that he was in Ottawa, he was always neutralized when the games were the biggest. Mm-hmm. You know, he never stepped up in those series against Toronto. He was always shut down. And he was shut down during, for all intents and purposes, shut down during the finals this year. So I think, you know, it's going to be what I think is going to be interesting is, again, you know, Hossa is going to be available as a big free agent signing. And does he do it again, trying to, you know, does he go for the one-year deal to try and find handicap who's got the best chance for a Stanley Cup? Or does he actually sit down, take the three-year deal, and then how much is that deal going to be worth? Mm-hmm. Does anybody think he's going to get $7.5 million a year in this market after what happened in Detroit this year?
Yeah, who even has $7.5 million to pay other than, let's say, the LA Kings.
Right. The LA Kings.
I can't think of another team that really even not only has the space but has the budget. You know,
if I were Marian Hossa, I would go to the LA Kings. This is going to be a team on the rise. Got a lot of young talent that's going to gel quickly, and I think it would be a great fit. They could use scoring off the wing, and they need to get to the playoffs. And, you know, great things, strange things happen when they, you know, when young teams get to the playoffs. Look at Chicago this year. They did a freaking phenomenal job. I expected them to be one and done. And, you know, they made it three rounds.
Well, and considering how competitive the rest of their division has been, you know, they have a good shot, considering that Phoenix is still not going to be anywhere near the playoffs next year. Mm-hmm. You know, Dallas is still, you know, is still going to be a crapshoot.
Dallas is going to be good this year. I think last year's anomaly based on just pure man games lost to injury and front office turmoil.
Perhaps you haven't heard, Mark Crawford was hired as the coach.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, so, yeah. They'll be, okay, it's going to be very interesting. Yeah, never mind. Let me attenuate that prediction. Okay.
I'll let you recap that. I'm actually pretty curious about what's going to happen when the Avs and the Stars meet up in Colorado for the first time, considering Crawford won a Stanley Cup with the Avs and was also the coach of Todd Bertuzzi when that whole incident went down.
Yeah, that's Crawford. Getting another job at the NHL. Wow. So many good coaches out there, and he should be behind bars.
Who you think, just off the top of your head, who you think Dave Tippett will wind up with after next year? Because I don't think he's going to be out of a job long
at all. He shouldn't be out of a job. Yeah. If Peter DeBoer is in Florida, we've lost. Who else got fired at the end of the season?
Oh, geez. Let's see. Jacques Lemaire is out.
But they've already hired.
So. What about who's going in New Jersey?
Yeah,
there's a good question.
Yeah, that's like Tippett is a perfect. He might be a perfect fit. Tippett in New Jersey is almost too perfect a fit. Evil Lou said today, I think that he's going to take his time looking for a new coach. So, but you know, Tippett may be looking for some kind of stability and, you know, working for Evil Lou. Stability is just not in the cards. So, but yeah, the Tippett would be a perfect fit over in New Jersey. But
and they're pretty much the only ones left, other than the Flames, and TSN is reporting that Brent Sutter is close to an agreement to become the coach.
He's going to be the coach in Calgary. There's no doubt about that. Has Edmonton made a move on coach yet?
Yes, they did. Pat Quinn.
Oh, that's right.
And, how could I forget Tom Rennie?
That's right. How could I forget Pat Quinn? Right.
Well, it's hard because
he even took a swipe at Lindy Ruff recently. It was actually funny.
He did.
Yeah, he said. I read in an article the other day. He said I couldn't believe after I missed the playoffs once and got fired, and yet there are some guys in this league who missed the playoffs 5 out of the last 7 years and they're still high and they're still employed. There's no love lost between anybody in either organization.
Did he not realize that he could incur the wrath of Tom Luongo? Did he not know?
He doesn't give a crap about me. He's Pat Quinn. He's a tough bastard. I never liked Quinn's Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, my hatred for the Maple Leafs came from how they would just goon it up night after night after night. That the Pat Quinn's idea of making it through the playoffs was to get as many goons as possible and cheat their way through. Yeah, you know, if we can't beat you, we'll kneecap you. And you know, I just lost a lot of respect for Toronto. Actually, before Toronto became a perennial failure at the Eastern Conference Finals, I actually enjoyed watching the Maple Leafs when I was still like late '90s, early, you know, right when I was coming back to hockey. And I didn't have any allegiance to any team. I was, the Leafs are kind of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And then they, turned into the goon squad. And I'm like, I got no time for this stuff. So,
I don't blame you, by the way, for not remembering about Edmonton, considering 4 out of the 5 teams in the Northwest Division are changing coaches this season.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's, you're right.
Yeah, and that's all off season. So it's. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting look. I can't say it's going to be too different of a look, but
yeah. I think what's going to be interesting is what San Jose does. I think they're a big wild card, maybe even at the draft, and trying to move people around. be very interesting to find out what happens. I think there's a rumor about, you know, Heatley wants out of Ottawa, and it's like, you know, huge news that Heatley wants out of Ottawa. Mm-hmm. Brian Burke, of course, sounds off on it. I thought that was, you know, funny. Heatley wants out of Ottawa. That's good. He won't, you know, get an opportunity to slew foot any of my guys 8 times a year anymore, or 6 times a year. Fine. Let's move him out of the division, so I only have to play him at least two, or no more than, yeah, move him out of the conference. I only have to play him twice a year for us, give him the opportunity to end somebody else's career. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever. There was the rumor I heard was that Marlowe for Heatley. I can't see that. I can see them moving Joe Thornton over Patrick Marlowe, to be honest with you, because it's Marlowe who's actually improving year in and year out, I think, in the playoffs, and it's Thornton who is the same.
Well, and it's Jonathan Chichu's stock that went down.
Yeah, seriously.
Quite a bit last year, yeah.
I always thought the Chichu thing, I always had in the back of my mind, or back of my head, that Chichu was going to have that one great year, and then he was going to be one and done in terms of, you know, the big goal-scoring threat. And I just had that feeling. He had that one-year wonder written all over him, and then they gave him the big contract, and he hasn't been able to live up to it.
Mm. You know? Yeah. Hey, tomorrow, Tuesday, the announcement for the Hockey Hall of Fame should be coming out as of the four who were joining or who are being inducted. Yzerman's a lock. Brett Hull's a lock. Luke Robitaille. The question, of course, is who do you take? Brian Leetch, Alexander Mulginley, or Gilney. Thank you. Jeez. Flubbed that one. Or Dave Anderchuk.
Ooh, that's a tough choice.
I'm thinking Brian Leetch myself.
Party Chuck, man. 600 plus goals on the left wing. All of them score within 5 feet of the net. It's 600 goals off the left wing is an impressive, impressive stat. You know, Dave Anderchuk has, you know, over 1,400 points. So 1,400 points, 600 plus goals. I mean, Brian Leetch, don't get me wrong, he's a great defenseman. And, mm-hmm. you know, if he doesn't make it in this year, he'll certainly make it in next year.
Right.
I've got to go with, you know, for me, an old Buffalo guy like me, my heart's on Party Chuck. And then, you know, the great Stanley Cup. And he's got the ring. Well, I mean, Leetch has got a ring too. That great job that Anderchuk did it in captaining that the Tampa team.
Yeah.
That's a tough choice. Who's the third guy?
Alexander Mulgilny.
And then Mulgilny.
Yeah.
Of the three though, I think Mulgilny is the least qualified. Mm-hmm. And that's not saying that's no slight against Alex. I mean, there's a lot of that is injury. He's a great hockey player but Leetch and Andrew Tucker, and I think in a different class,
yeah,
and as a player. So they've all got rings. McGillney's got one with New Jersey, if I remember correctly. Any one of them would be deserving of a bid in the hall, in my eyes. But you can't not first ballot a 600 goal scorer. You just can't. Just can't do that. You just can't leave a guy out like that.
I don't know. So. I mean, you know, if would you swap him for Luke Robitaille?
Tough choice.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, I think they're
similar players. I mean, in terms of their stats, in terms of their influence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Brian Leetch would be the only defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of that class, which, you know, I think would. May play, you know, I don't know if he'll play in his favor at all or not. It just seems like, right. You know, if given the choices, Dave Anderchuk, I was really disappointed they didn't get another contract after being, you know, the first guy to hoist the Stanley Cup for his team. And then the next, you know, they have the lockout and then he's done.
Yeah. He was 41 years old or 42 years old. He could barely skate. He was never a skater in the first place. And they came out of the lockout. Andrewchuk would have been an embarrassment.
Well, you tell that to Chris Chelios, mister. You just
like I said earlier, you know, class and dignity and Chelios just don't work in the same sentence together. But I think all things considered, I think it was the right thing at the end of the day for everybody. Maybe not at the time, Dave, I'm sure, I know Dave felt bad about it, but, it was the right thing to do. At the end of the day, you don't sully that memory by watching a guy really struggle in a game that he wouldn't have been able to keep up with. Mm-hmm. That's a tough choice, and I don't think I wouldn't want to be on that committee, and to be there'd be some very very interesting conversations, yeah. Heated. So
well, we'll find out. We'll know by the next time that you and I talk. The only other thing that we have left is the NHL awards, which
congrats to the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, exactly. The Boston Bruins swept every category that they had a player involved in, including coach. Tim Thomas, man.
Great job at cordial.
Yeah. Tim Thomas, though, he was awesome at those awards. He was really choked up when he won the Vezina. And All anybody can really say about him is great story. But, yeah, it's to see him get up and make his speech, he was absolutely – he's the real deal, totally genuine. And yeah. Then when he and Manny Fernandez got up to accept the award for the Jennings trophy, he was thanking everybody on the Stars. He thanked his wife. He looked at Manny and said, you want me to thank your wife while I'm up here?
Yeah, potentially a really awkward moment.
Yeah, it was it was the kind of the laughter that the audience had kind of had that The Office feel, uh-huh. This is really funny, but it's really uncomfortable, and it's really funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Alexander Ovechkin won the Hart, mm-hmm. Won the Pearson, and cracked a joke at Pavel Datsyuk, which was great.
Nice.
telling Evgeny Malkin that his English was better than Datsyuk's. So the whole thing looked like they were all under heat lamps at a California pizza kitchen. It absolutely looked horrible. I nearly did a spit take when Jeremy Roenick said that next up was one of his favorite artists, Chaka Khan.
Maybe that was done for Chris Jellios, when to commemorate his draft day.
Hey, I think it was great that Jeremy Roenick was actually there. He wasn't there to win an award, and he still showed up. And when he scratched for a night of playing hockey, he's at the door. Roenick. Exactly. Well, there was a bar across the street. Oh, but you'll still present awards that you're not up for. Good for you, man.
Yeah, but this is Roenick. Never won to shun a heat lamp. So,
yeah. Yeah, he flubbed a few lines on his teleprompter reading, so I think he cost himself a few TV gigs. But I implore the NHL to try not to make it look like the Oscars or behave like the Oscars. When your very first thing is
or even the daytime Emmys, just.
Well, the very first thing that they did, Chaka Khan's singing, and there are no clips of hockey. There are absolutely no clips of hockey. The only good part about Chaka Khan was that she wasn't going to set the Stanley Cup upside down like Def Leppard. That's the only good thing.
I was going to say, or that her act ended. That's usually
songs. They did two songs. They did a song from her midway through. Don't know why.
Oh, well. No, budget cuts, man.
Yeah.
They don't call it a correction for nothing.
Yeah, next year we'll be watching the Tonys. Not bad. Pretty bad.
Just stop now. Yeah. Just stop.
All right, Tom. Next time we talk, we'll know who our team's picked. We'll have some I'm sure we'll have plenty to say about that.
I know I will.
And then, of course, July 1st is the first day of free agency, and we'll take a look and see what our teams need, what other teams need, and see if it becomes any clearer who Jay Bomeister may actually sign with.
Yeah, so. Let's hope so. I figure by the end of July 1st, we'll know.
Cool.
If he's not signed by 12:05 on July 1st. I'll be shocked. Yeah. All right, James, you have a good week, man.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Mm-hmm. Take care.
Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. You can always find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find out how to subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us comments about anything that you heard, or even find links to some of the stuff we were talking about. You can call the Rink at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. And you can email us. The address is rink@rinkpodcast.com. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.